Hi, and welcome back to Power Suit Podcast, the creative podcast where we talk about how the hell you can stay employable while the world of work is changing so fast. I'm your host, Lauren Ingram. My background is I've worked in PR and digital for years, and then last year I founded Power Suit Social as a creative network for uncertain times. This episode, I'm really glad to have Paul Meller join me. Paul is the co-founder of design agency Meller & Smith, which he started with Jim Smith all the way back in 2009, which is donkey's years in the age of the internet. Last year, Paul and the team came to the same conclusion as I did, which is that 2017 was the right time to start a new creative event and do things a bit differently. So I made Power Suit Social, and Meller & Smith went the potty mouth route and made an event series called Take Fucking Risks. Take Fucking Risks has taken the creative world by storm, and they've managed to get some really big name speakers on board, like Cindy Gallup, Mr. Bingo, Dave Trott, and of course, copywriter Vicky Ross, who's spoken on this podcast before. So welcome, Paul.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in, Paul. You're a man of mystery on LinkedIn. Looking at your various profiles online, you've said that you've scraped by on your degree and you only have one job listed at all. And then suddenly you seem to be taking over the world. So do you want to tell me a bit about how you got here?
Strange story, really. I don't really put a great deal online, but I had a bit of an unusual journey from sort of graduation to where I am now. So I grew up, my father was in the military, and so I moved around all the time, really. And so then when I eventually finished school, I went to Loughborough University and I graduated, but I had a great time at university. I didn't really learn a great deal. I fought with most of the lecturers. I thought I was right all of the time. I occasionally bump into them now and I cringe. But upon graduating, I just bummed around. I didn't really do a great deal for 4 or 5 years. I didn't even do the cool thing that everyone does where they go on a gap year or something like that. I just bummed around the UK. And eventually, sort of after a few years, and I had a few jobs, I worked in agencies a little bit, and I mean, I was an absolute nightmare to employ. I didn't always turn up. And when I did turn up, I was argumentative. But upon all of that, I ended up eventually sort of becoming a bit of a ski bum. I was in the Alps, and I met my now wife, and she gave me a stern talking to, and that was the jolt I needed to stop sort of dossing about. And I moved to London, and I started working at an agency, and I was there for about 18 months, and I sort of rose through the ranks a bit, and one day decided to tell them all to fuck off, and literally walked out in a ball of flames, burnt all my bridges. And the next day, with a solid hangover, went and set up Meller & Smith. I didn't have a great deal of money at the time, and I'd literally just put 400 quid in a business bank account that was enough to pay the internet and the phone for a couple of months, and then just got on the phone. And that's how it started. And that's still the same business account, the bank account that we have today. It's weird. It's not the typical story, and I think that's probably why it looks a bit weird on things like LinkedIn and the dots and stuff.
Wow. That was not the answer I was expecting.
No.
That's mad. That's really cool, though. Do you think there's any value in the time spent doing nothing?
Yes. I think way too many people jump into work. Some people work hard at university and they get firsts and things like that. And they just jump straight into work and then they're flat out. And you think, no wonder you're producing absolute dross of work. You don't have any experience. You have no life experience. And they go too fast into the world of work, I think. I mean, I'm not saying everyone should just bum about and live on people's sofas for 5 years, but that idea that people should have a bit of life experience and go down the pub at midday and stuff like that, you don't have to be straight into this structured world. You've got a long time to work, 30, 40 years. A couple of years is not going to make any difference in terms of that. I think actually it informs a lot of my work and the agency's work now. Like, I think I understand the man or woman on the street better, and therefore our work is more effective because I've dicked about for 5 years. I mean, I know that sounds really weird, but I do actually think there's life experience in the work that we do.
I think your story is really cool. I'd also really like to hear about the events. Yeah, you're now selling out these 400-person venues and getting in these big speakers like Cindy Gallup. Were the events like a deliberate game plan or more of an experiment, a test?
It's a bit of a strange one because they started as a joke. Literally, like, we were just in the pub as a studio. And we've been talking about taking fucking risks to clients for about 2 or 3 years now. And what we realised is I can only talk to a client, you know, sort of one client at a time. I can only sit in one meeting room or one boardroom at a time and influence that person. So we were in the pub and we were like, should we just start doing events? Yeah, let's do it. And to her credit, Cookie, the TFR queen at Mellor & Smith, was an intern at the time. This was March last year. And she literally put her hand up and said, I'll do it. She had never organised an event in her life. She was 9 months graduated. And she is, I mean, she's incredible. She's turned what was a joke in a pub into a phenomenal event. So we have all these amazing speakers, Cindy Gallops, the Dave Trotz, Mr. Bingo, Vicky Ross, who I love. It started off quite slow and we had 50 people in the back room of a pub for the first one. And now we've done five events. The last two have been over 400 people at each one. So they weren't a deliberate plan. They were a joke, but they fitted a business case, which was let's go and make more people aware of what we stand for and who we are. And if they then want to have a chat about, you know, working with us, then fine. Actually, one of the best things that I never thought would come out of this is we have people keep offering, they want to come and work for us. People come along to the event and they go, Paul, can I have a job? Which I never thought would be one of the outcomes of the event. But yeah, they've been really, really successful. They are doing their job, which is they're getting our name out there, which I think is kind of the key. But I'm way more interested in spreading the word about taking fucking risks, because I think our industry is terrible at its job. The research that stacks that up is the average Londoner sees 1,000 ads a day, so radio, TV, print, whatever it'll be. And of those 1,000 ads, 89% of them are forgotten. Only 4% are remembered positively. We're shockingly bad at our job. Can you imagine if an engineer, if like 89% of their bridges fell down? They just wouldn't happen. But apparently it's okay if 89% of advertising is forgotten, which is the opposite to what its job is. And I think that is because people design by committee, produce bland, vanilla, average work, and they're not risky. They're not taking risks. They're not prepared to be different. It's easier just to kind of sit in the crowd. Like, just tell me an ad that you've seen in the last year that actually had some, like, you remembered. Like, so few. Actually, people are much more likely to reference ads from 20 years ago or 30 years ago than they are to reference an ad from yesterday. And that says everything about the lack of creative appetite within both agencies and brands. I don't think it's not all clients here. You know, there's a lot of agencies out there that'll just take the check and won't really push their job and their agenda and the idea to create demand or create awareness or whatever it is that the brief is setting out. So I don't think it's just a, like, let's all blame the clients. Hmm. I think there's a lot of agencies that just take the check and aren't necessarily interested in producing the best work. That makes me think that I'm trolling, like, properly, like, trolling agencies, and I'm not doing that, but holding the mirror up is healthy sometimes. There was some amazing work produced, and like I say, like, people reference ads like from 30 years ago and they don't reference ads from yesterday.
But just to play devil's advocate there, that would also be because you'd have fewer ads, right? Fewer, say, TV spots or billboard spots.
There's definitely more ads now, but there are as many TV breaks as there were now as there were 10 years ago. There are more TV channels now, and there are more...
more opportunities to have messages thrown at you.
All the more reason to take risks. I find it really interesting that there's way more media now than there was before. Of that, there is no doubt. There's a lot more choice, all the different channels. That, I don't think, is a reason to not create great work. Creating great work is still creating great work. Using almost like the excuse that the media landscape is so fragmented now that it can't possibly create ads that we use, like we used to in the 70s and 80s, I don't think is kind of the right call or the right way to look at it. I just think there's a lot more emphasis from the different parties that make these kind of decisions about just doing safe work. No one got sacked for doing a mundane pony ad. But to be in that 4% and be really good, there's a risk that it might fall on its face and people do get sacked for that. And so they just don't sign off on that kind of work. And that's what a lot of the Take Fucking Risks events are about, is to try and encourage people to go after good work.
Side note, would you say, well, this is just kind of my own bugbear, would you say there are too many animals in adverts?
Yeah. I mean, I just think that, why do people think that if they put an animated animal in an ad that it's suddenly going to be a lot more effective? No, it's not. Like, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. But like, if it's a shit idea, it's a shit idea.
Some ads got it right. So I don't know, let's say, compare the market, meerkats. So I feel like that kind of sparked the trend for the animated animals. Not to say nobody had done animated animals before, but I feel like that's what popularised it in advertising. And it just feels like, too many brands are just doing that. And it's not actually a creative idea. Yeah, a dancing bear or something or other, giraffe. And what's that really got to do with the product? Like,
exactly.
At least the meerkat market, there was like, oh, I don't know, a brief crossover there, even if it's a bit silly, but that's so tied to their brand now, that it makes a lot of sense, whereas you can't relaunch every brand with a mascot against it. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I agree entirely. It's actually really lazy.
Yeah, that's exactly the word I'd say about it.
Yeah, and it involves almost no thought. It's easy. Ugh, I hate that kind of stuff. Honestly, my wife would tell you, I literally just shout at the TV when I see crap like that. I've got steam coming out my ears. No animal TV ads will ever come out of Mellor & Smith.
Okay, good. Actually, because I'm going back to what we were just talking about, do you think it's a duty of either those agencies or clients to push for, yeah, slightly more maverick creatives in the creative department?
Yeah, 100%. It's something actually that Dave Trott talks about, where a lot of the time, one of the causes of the problem, which is that the juniors that are coming into the industry are coming out of advertising school or out of design college or whatever, and they didn't used to do that. And Dave Trott talks about it when he was running GGT. They were getting people off the street. You know, they'd get the plumber and the gas man and the guy who worked down the pub, and they would be writing ads. And so we've lost this. Advertising is just out of touch. The people that work in advertising and marketing and design and stuff, it's completely out of touch with the rest of the country. They just sit in a bubble, and generally in a London bubble, because people just don't even leave London. They don't go outside.
It does risk end up being quite formulaic, doesn't it?
Yes.
If you're sort of trained in this is how you write an ad, or like certain setups that you just kind of learn by rote, and actually you shouldn't be making ads by rote.
That's why they all look the same.
I'm going to get off my hobby horse about it.
Yeah. No, you stay on your hobby horse. You keep banging the drum, because it's really important.
I want to hear a little bit more about the events, actually, which is, it's been good for getting the message out about getting risky. Are you planning to take things like bigger and better? Like, in an ideal world, would you kind of keep going bigger and bigger, or where are you trying to take it?
So we don't really have a plan. We don't have like a world domination plan or anything like that. We really like putting on the events. We really enjoy them. We are not an event company. We are we're a brand and ad agency that just puts on events. We've got people coming to us now saying they want us to put events on in other parts of the country and also in other parts of the world, which is amazing. So if there's any sponsors out there that want to sponsor us to do that, then you're more than welcome to pick up the phone and give me a buzz.
Cheeky.
But we're now starting to think about how we can spread the message in other ways. And so it doesn't have to be an event. I think the message is the most important part of that. So we've got a few ideas, and you also try to run a business at the same time. So it's one of those things that it's a definite side hustle.
Yeah, well, because you guys are only 6 people, right?
Yes.
So that's mad that you guys run an agency, deliver work, and also run quite large-scale events. I think it's really cool. You've said in the past that was deliberate, that you're going to stay quite small. What's your thinking behind that?
I didn't start the agency, or we, me and Jim, I didn't start the agency to kind of manage people and to grow a big business. We weren't looking to be bought by Martin Sorrell or anything like that. We're way more interested in doing the work. And I think if you don't actually need that many people to produce good work. Actually, I think less people produces better work. As long as they're good, and we have some very talented people within the studio. We're way more interested in producing good work than growing a big business. I mean, like, you might grow a little bit, you know, we might sort of stretch more than 6, might go up to like, I don't know, 10 or 12 or something. But it's consistently stayed around the sort of between 6 and 8 mark for the last few years, and I'm quite happy with that. I think it produces better work.
Also, obviously avoids too much drama with sort of line management and the boring side of running a business, right? If you keep things lean, less of the admin, I suppose.
Yeah, and I do actually, you hear quite a lot of people, not necessarily within agency world, but people that just run their other businesses in other sectors, you find that they actually, you know, after like 10 years, they're getting bored of their business because it's a drag and it's not what they started. You know, I actually speak to lots of people that run their own businesses in that respect, and you think, man, that's got to suck. Because actually running your own business should be something really cool. And then when it's got so bloated and so far away from what it was when you started that you now hate it, that's not cool.
Yeah, not a good position to be in. Going back to how you guys market yourselves and how you're getting your message out there, obviously I've noticed that you talk about yourselves differently than other agencies. I enjoy all the swearing, so like searching for an agency is a ball ache. And then as well as your imagery, and even the fact that your case studies have loads of behind the scenes, you know, imagery and video and things like that, I've noticed that you behave differently than other agencies. Would you say that there's a lot of bullshit in how other agencies are talking about themselves?
Yeah, There's like, how many ninjas are there? You know, how many like mavericks, whatever it is, like, you know, pioneers. I mean, we don't have to talk some rubbish as an industry. I just think you work in probably one of the coolest industries. The creative industry, it should be a really cool, interesting, challenging job and environment to be in. And then we make it the most jargon-filled bullshit fest of absolute crap. And it's like, no, just say it exactly how it is. Don't call yourself a fucking ninja or any of that kind of, just be honest. And that's what we look through that lens of, like, is this something that we would want to read? You know, so when we're writing the copy for our website, let's say, like, is this something we'd want to read? And if the answer is no, then we're not going to put it on there. I think honesty goes a long way. A lot of people that get in touch with us, you know, they come to the event or they find our website or whatever it is, one of the first things they say is that it's honest. They're going to trust what I say to them because of the way that we've put ourselves forward. And that's something we've done on purpose because we are honest. Sometimes they don't really like what we say, but that's okay. I'd rather someone walked out of a meeting saying, oh, well, I don't really like what he said, but, you know, they believe what I said. And I think that's, it's really competitive, the landscape, especially within London, because you've got all these agencies crammed into a tiny space, all chasing work, and you have to be different. And I also think that our job as agencies with our clients' brands is to create demands, make them different, make them sell more product, whatever it is. And yet 99% of the agencies all look the same. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's mad. I hadn't even thought about the enjoyment idea. It's almost as though we think that clients are actively looking for words like, I don't know, optimize or leverage or whatever, as though like that brings joy to their lives. That's what they hope to read on their lunch break. But obviously not. Clients are normal humans too. And, you know, they also chose to go into the world of marketing. They don't live for jargon. They just happen to work in it. I've noticed that whenever we have, say, an intern or work experience person or, I don't know, anyone I've spoken to entering the industry, I've always been quite insistent on the point that they should either Google terms like acronyms or immediately ask what they mean, just because we don't notice the amount that we use that all the time. Even if it's something like in an email, it might say, can you get this over to me by EOP? And if you are an intern, you're going, oh God, what's an EOP? What do I do?
It's a really technical term.
That's not even a marketing thing, but yeah. We just insist on like abbreviating everything. And given that we work in the business of communication, it's kind of amazing how complicated that we make things for ourselves.
Yes, I agree. I agree entirely. I also think that it's not particularly, you've got all these people that graduates coming into the market, trying to get jobs in agencies and brands and things. And we're not making it easy for them to want to stay in our industry. I just think it's, you know, we talk about it's inclusivity and diversity and these kind of things, but like just being normal people would encourage more people and a more diverse sector of people to kind of enter into our industry just if it was something as simple as like just removing the jargon.
Yeah, because that can be quite scary when you're new to anything, I suppose. Like, I don't know why I had like a bit of a flashback the other day of my fear of the phrase raise a PO because I didn't understand what it meant. And it obviously was such an important thing. And so I could witness the importance of it, but couldn't understand what it was or whether I had to do it or what it meant or like what that actually involved if it was my job to do it. But everything seems as like big and looming as that when you're new.
Yeah. I mean, think back to what you're like when you were first entering this job. Like everything is new, everything's different. It's probably quite scary. To then add in stuff that isn't like usual language makes it even harder for someone, and it's not going to encourage people to stay within the industry. And then you start coming up with absolute drivel like I'm a ninja or a pioneer or scientist. It's just like, no man, just your creatives, you got art directors, copywriters, producers, editors, you know, just use real terms, like actual real words.
Do you have advice for people entering the industry then, sort of grads and school leavers?
There's a couple of things that I really like. So one of the things that Cindy spoke about at our last event, she was like, just go and sit on the front row of every event that you go to. I love that. It's such an easy thing to do, but no one does it. How many events have you been to where the front row's empty? So that immediately you're different and you'll get to speak to the people that are on the stage. So yeah, sit on the front row, go for a walk. Like I have this thing, not enough people get outside of their office. Just get outside and go for a walk. Jim, my co-director, co-founder, whatever, he talks about this idea that we take briefs and we discuss briefs in the studio late on in the afternoon, and then we don't actually then start working on the brief until the next day. So we take the brief, within the studio, we work on a brief at like say four o'clock, and it'd be like, here's the brief, like talking it through, discussing it. And then we'll sleep. And then the next morning, we'll then start working on the creative and come up with ideas or research or whatever it is. Hmm. Because your brain is very good at sorting information while you're sleeping. It's not very good at taking information and then immediately being able to like regurgitate out ideas. So like get outside, go for a walk, get out of the studio. Those things will have a big impact on your ability to come up with good ideas. And my last piece of advice, whenever I speak to anybody like that's asking about how to get in, is don't procrastinate. Just fucking get on with it. There's so many people that will arm and ah over CVs and portfolios and books. And it's like, nah, just get out there. There's no better way of trying to crack your way into agency land than just getting out there. So don't put it off.
Wise words. Yeah, this is my standard 1980s question, my power suit social question, that, yeah, back in the late 80s, 30 years ago, we'd hauled ourselves out of recession and joblessness using shoulder pads and hairspray and everything that I think was required to get us out of that. And we kind of need to be doing the same thing at the moment. But what about, 30 years from now, where do you see things going for our bit of the industry?
Well, I'm not particularly worried. But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, the robots are going to come and like take my job. And I'm like, nah. No, they're not going to take my job. I think people get very obsessed about the future, and I've never understood why people are so obsessed about the future and not as obsessed about the present. Like, we have big problems in our industry right now. I think there are some things that will never change. Like, there are always going to be people that want to buy products. There's always going to be brands. There's always going to be someone that wants a car. They're not going to be driverless cars. You know, there's always going to be like this idea of money, probably not a cryptocurrency type thing. People peddle a lot of rubbish. So there's a lot of things that won't change. Of course, there'll be some things that change. And, you know, I think there'll probably be a lot of flexibility in the workplace. I hope there'll be a lot more inclusion and diversity. I mean, a lot of the things that are going on in our industry right now, a lot of the themes like that, hopefully they will be resolved by, you know, in 30 years time. Well, I certainly hope so. I think a really good book that I would recommend people read is Tom Goodwin's Digital Darwinism book, which is fantastic. And it talks about like the process that we're going through at the moment, the digital changes that are going on. And he kind of talks essentially along those kind of lines, that there's actually going to be a lot of things that don't change, and there's going to be some stuff that does change. I do think our industry has forgotten what its one advantage is, which is creativity. It's the one thing that we have as agencies that management consultants don't have. You know, the bankers and the insurance guys, none of those guys have they don't have creativity. They've got all the other things. They've got strategy, they've got planning, they've got all those things. So we should be concentrating all of our efforts in maximizing creativity, that one legal advantage that we have, and stop worrying about all the other crap that I just don't get it. I don't understand why people are not focusing on the thing that is our advantage.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Yeah, so fun question now. I admitted when I met you that I was worried that you guys would be dicks. Luckily, that's not the case, and fairly embarrassing on my part. Partly that I thought that, and partly that I actually said it to you, to your face. Have you got any embarrassing work stories to share?
Well, I'm glad you don't think I'm a dick. I don't really have that many embarrassing stories from the studio, but I do have a tendency to not really look at stuff when I'm ordering things online. And so there's a bit of a running joke in the studio that, for example, we have a church pew that we got off eBay, and it's like this really long, like 13, 14 feet or whatever. And I bought it and it arrived, and then we couldn't actually fit it in the studio. We had to saw it in half. This like 100-year-old beautiful oak church pew that we bought to have as a bench in the studio, and I had to cut it in half, which I was like, you knob, when I bought that. And then I did the same thing again. We had these really long whiteboards that we ordered, and they were like 5 or 6 meter long whiteboards. I ordered them, and then we also couldn't fit them in the studio. So they stuck outside the studio, outside in the street for a few days before they were picked up and sent back. They're not like the funniest stories, but they're just, you know, when you're like, you knob, I should have just measured the door frame that it's got to go through before I ordered them and things like that. So I'm sure the rest of the guys in the studio are much better placed to answer when we've, you know, cocked it up, rather than kind of self-confessing.
So you don't have any other cringy stories from, well, apart from leaving in a ball of flames, do you have any other cringy stories from that period of your life?
No, not really. I mean, I look back now and I just think, I don't know who gave me a job. I mean, like, I was just so unemployable. So, yeah, kudos to the few people that actually gave me a job. Yeah, I didn't always turn up. And I did actually just walk out of one once. There was an agency I was working for and I just left at lunchtime and just went to the pub. And then weirdly, they then had to, you know, when you start and you fill out, like, your next of kin and, like, the details like that, and they thought I'd, like, I don't know, fallen under a bus or something.
Oh,
and
God.
And they're, like, phoning my mum saying, like, where's Paul? You know, he didn't come back from lunchtime. And, you know, then I got home having had a few beers. That's when I was living at home at the time. And, yeah, mum screaming at me because she thought I was very irresponsible. But that's...
Wow.
Don't do that, because that's not cool. Getting told off by your mum when you've had a few beers down the pub at lunchtime is not cool.
That is, yeah, top career advice. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Then, lastly, where can people find you?
So... at 81 Southwark Street, if they want to come to the studio. We don't have to do everything online. They can just pop, anyone can walk in. There's always beer in the fridge and we're always happy to have a chat with anybody. But like, if it has to be on the digital world, then they can find us at TFR Events. At TFR Events is Take Fucking Risks for catching up with what's been going on there, and then next details on the events. And then mellowandsmith.com or at mellowandsmith for anything agency related.
Thank you so much, Paul. Yeah, I've really enjoyed today's chat, and I enjoy the fact that we'll need to mark today's episode as explicit on iTunes. I don't know if that affects the ranking of the podcast or not, but yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Cheers.
This has been Power Suit Podcast. I hope you found it helpful for shaping your creative career and maybe taking some fucking risks. The show was written and produced by Lauren Ingram, and if you've enjoyed it, hit subscribe on iTunes so you'll get a regular dose of creative advice. Thank you for listening.